are 25 minutes before 10 o'clock. Thank you for tuning in. I wanted to introduce our next guest by bringing up a story that I saw on a video on the internet. I have never watched the TV show called Shark Tank. I know it's a pretty popular show, but for some reason, I think it might have been... God, it was either Godvine or one of those websites that is a Christian-based website. I guess that was a redundancy, wasn't it? But anyway, there was a farmer who went on to Shark Tank. If you've never seen Shark Tank, just real quickly, the gist of the show is that there are money people there and people who have these ideas or these inventions, and they try to persuade the money people to invest in their ideas and or inventions, okay? Mm-hmm. So there was a farmer. I looked it up so I would remember his name. His name was Johnny Georges. He is a farmer, and he had an idea, and he brought it to the Shark Tank guys. And basically, they made fun of him because he didn't want to make his profit like 300 or 400%, whatever they thought it should be.
Oh, my gosh.
And he was happy with it being just a few dollars profit per whatever he had invented. I can't remember what he invented a... I think a thing to keep water on each individual plant. Anyway, that's not important.
Oh, okay.
The important thing is his resistance to the suggestion that he have a 500% profit or something like that was what got everybody's attention, because he said, I'm going to be selling these to other farmers. They can't afford that. They have to have something affordable, and I'm okay with making just a small profit. And,
right.
And they were like all over him, making him feel bad. But one of the guys, I believe one of the Shark Tank guys, did step forward and say, you know what, I like your philosophy and the way you live. I've often thought that that's what we need. If we had people who just said, you know what, I don't need a lot, I just need a little. So here's my ear of corn. It costs me, a quarter to grow this ear of corn, and I'll sell it to you for 30 cents. Mm-hmm. I'll make a nickel.
Yeah.
You know, if we lived that way, then we wouldn't have extraordinary gasoline prices. We wouldn't have extraordinary health care prices. We wouldn't have any of that. And in our world, Robin, when we try to do this... Mm-hmm. We end up hurting ourselves.
Yeah.
We do the same thing in a way, but we ask for a very little profit. So I don't know where the line should be drawn. John Horvat II is on the phone. He has a book that really will make you think about what we need to be doing in this country and in the world. The book is called Return to Order, From a Frenzied Economy to an Organic Christian Society. The subtitle, Where We've Been, How We Got Here, and Where We Need to Go. Just to give you a background on John before we say hello to him, he's a socioeconomics scholar, he's an educator, he's a researcher, he's a well-in-demand speaker, he's a contributor to the Wall Street Journal, Fox News, the Christian Post, the Washington Times, ABC News, C-SPAN, and it's such an honor to have him on the show. I believe this is a return visit for John. Am I right?
Yes.
Am I right? And then, oh gosh, there's something else, too, I want to bring up to his attention as well, but let me say hi to him first. Good morning, John. How you doing?
Morning. Great to be back.
Where are you?
I'm up in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
Near Gettysburg. So.
So, how did I do with the intro? Is it even close to what we want to talk about? Not really.
Not really, but it's great. No, I think it's great. I really enjoyed your story about the farmer because that is what we need. We need to bring back the human element back into economy and culture that many times just ignores it, especially from the point of view of money, just making money the primary concern. That's not,
yeah. Well, we had a guy on here who owned a brothel. And,
yes.
I mean, and he was all over the place about legalizing prostitution, how it doesn't hurt anybody. And I said, well, wouldn't that make our daughters have this as a career option? I mean, wouldn't that be a horrible thing in that regard? Oh, no. He was so sure it was the best thing and it would bring in money. And,
exactly.
And I don't know where the world is going. It just, to me, seems so contrary to what we should be thinking, what we should be saying.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just, it's unimaginable, something like that, because, so many times people think, well, it doesn't hurt anyone, but they forget that we are social beings. Most of the things we do have some type of repercussion on others. And, it's this extreme individualism that says, well, I'm the center of the world, and everybody should just pretty much adjust accordingly.
Did we, in the beginnings of this country, or at any time on planet Earth, maybe not on this country, but it seems like in the beginnings we had this very... more level-headed way of doing business with one another. You know, I'm going to put the shoes on your horse, and thanks for the extra dime. You know, and I can go to the store and take that dime and buy a loaf of bread, and the guy who made the bread gets an extra penny because of it. That's his profit. I mean, am I wrong about that? Did we have that world at one time?
Oh, definitely. I think we definitely did. And a lot of what contributed to the, let's say, this mechanization of economy was the Industrial Revolution. I'm not against industry or technology, but you know the pace of way and the speed in which these things happened, and the need to just rationalize everything, make it according to a machine and not a person. That's what did it. But you know, we did have that. Even today, some of the relationships that exist inside business and small business, you know, where people take care of others, it's human. It's a very human thing to happen, and it does happen, but not nearly as much as it used to.
Why does everything seem to go out of control?
Well, I mean, it is a part of our modern economy and culture. To say what I call frenetic intemperance, where you just it's the desire to have everything instantly, regardless of the consequences. And we see this a lot in our lifestyles and our gadgetry, and you know, just I have to have it, and it's a self-feeding thing. I have to have it faster, and it just keeps going. And you know, we've seen over the last decades, you know, how the pace of life is really just. It's just incredibly much faster.
One of the things in the book that caught my attention that resonated with me was a quote from Saint John Bosco, and he's talking about his fear as to whether he's charging the amount that God thinks he should charge for something.
Right. That was a story of a blacksmith who was a donor of his. He was, and the blacksmith said, you know, I do a job and then I charge for it. And I wonder, when I write it down in my book, when God's up there writing it down as his book, if my price is higher than his. And so I normally just cut it down a bit, just to be sure, you know, just to err on the right, on the side of prudence. And so that's what I charge. And he was still a very prosperous blacksmith. You know, he didn't have to do that, but he wanted to be sure that he was completely just. And you know, that's the kind of thing that really makes an economy great, when you have those type of people who worry about those issues and not just say, you know, well, I'll just take all the money I can.
Does the Bible specifically give us instructions on how to run an economy?
Oh yeah, I'm sure. No, there's a lot of things that are involved, and the Ten Commandments are a great start. Once you start doing that, you start thinking in terms of not stealing, of not lying. Those are the basics to build trust, which allow for a good economy. But I mean, it's amazing. One of the sources of when I was doing research for the book about economy, I found a Norwegian professor who wasn't a Catholic, and as I am, and who did a study of what they called confessional manuals, and these were the spiritual advice that priests would give to penitents. And he studied 90 of these that were written during the Middle Ages. And, you know, a lot of the sinners coming in were merchants, and they had very concrete questions about how to justly deal with other people. And so this author just said, well, this is he developed the whole doctrine of how, you know, they dealt with these issues and all the guidelines that were given. It was a very fascinating thing to see, you know, how people cared about the moral problems as well as the commercial problems.
When a person is told that they need to tithe 10%, do you tithe 10% to your church and then do more monies in addition to that to different organizations in town that need monies, or does that 10% encompass everything?
Like all charity, if it's really charity, it's voluntary. And so, you know, if you hold yourself to a rigid, amount, it should be given freely. So, you know, I do tithe to my church, and I try. And when there an occasion arises that I'm moved to give, I give to that. It's not a rigid thing, nor should it be. I mean, it should be something it's very voluntary. It comes from the heart, and that's what real charity is.
When we look at somebody like Donald Trump, who's considering our vote for the presidency, and you realize this is a businessman. The one thing I said, and I don't know if you're going to agree, and I'm not trying to make this a political thing nor about Trump, but he made much of his money from, you know, pricing things that he bought for more than he bought them for. But of course, he fixed them up too, and those would be the real estate properties. But he also made money from casinos, and casinos are designed to be very attractive. And everybody knows you're going to lose money, or you're likely to lose money, but it's also, it's kind of a trap. And in a way, I was wondering, you know, and I'm not anti-Trump, nor am I trying to pitch for him. I'm just saying that when you look at what a person has done as a way to make money, you have to wonder if there's something in that fabric of his personality that we need to be aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is definitely, if you, the way you make your money, it has to be a moral way of doing it. It has to be a way that they're not ill-gotten gains. That's part of the whole idea of justice and economy. And gambling, I mean, especially modern gambling, I just did an article about that. And there was a book that said that these machines are so technically advanced that some of these slot machines have face recognition software, and they will get the face of the person and know that this is his favorite machine. And as the person goes to the exit will recognize the face, and the machine will call out the name of the person to come back.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Makes sense to me, though.
You have to question the morality of something like that. I mean, it's just too much.
So you're in Pennsylvania, and I don't know really